Im Wald, eine Kulturgeschichte.
In the Forest, a Cultural History. The podcast to complement the exhibition of the same name at the National Museum Zurich or for when you're out and about.
In dieser Episode.
In this episode, we go for a bath in the forest.
Bei der Waldtherapie oder dem Waldbaden, also
forest therapy or forest bathing, that is going to the forest for health purposes, means appreciating the forest with all our senses and letting it work on us.
Wie das geht im
Malin Gubsch, a forester, tells us how to do this, how to walk in the forest with all our senses turned on. She heads up various forest projects and also offers intensive forest walks, and she answers questions put to her by Christoph Kello.
Mich fasziniert vor allem so die spezifische Waldatmosphäre. Mit den unterschiedlichen Farbkleidern.
What fascinates me most is the special forest atmosphere with its different colors through the seasons, which is so completely different from what we experience in everyday life. Stepping into the forest gives me a completely different quality of time. That is something that absolutely fascinates me.
Das heißt, der Wald als ein Ort des Erlebens von Zeit,
so the forest as a place of experiencing time, temporality, transience, but also a kind of regeneration.
Unbedingt. Also wenn ich mir zum Beispiel die Lärchenwälder im Wallis angucke.
Absolutely. If you look at the larch forests in the Valais, for example, how their needles turn golden orange in autumn and then gradually fall to the ground. That is something I associate very strongly with transience. My own transience. The forest inspires me strongly to reflect on and philosophize about life.
Dieses Eintauchen, Malin Gubsch, das praktizieren ja sehr viele Schweizerinnen und Schweizer.
In this immersion, as practiced by many Swiss, as well as by people across Europe, the forest is seen as a place of intensive experiences. How do people perceive the forest? Are there any surveys on how the forest is perceived?
Ja, auf jeden Fall. Die Eidgenössische Forschungsanstalt für Wald, Schnee und Landschaft, die WSL, die führt seit 1997 Umfragen mit der Schweizer Bevölkerung durch, wo sie genau das Verhältnis der Schweizer Bevölkerung zu
yes,
ihrem Wald
definitely.
Analysieren möchte.
The Swiss Federal Institute for Forest, Snow and Landscape Research, WSL, has been conducting surveys in Switzerland since 1997, analyzing how exactly the Swiss people feel about their forest. The scientists found out that Switzerland is the leader in Europe when it comes to the length of time and the frequency with which people spend time in the forest. 94% of those surveyed go into the forest regularly, 50% even once a week. That is a huge figure. On average, people spend 30 to 60 minutes in the forest. Satisfaction after a stay in the forest is high. 90% of those surveyed said they were more than satisfied with their stay in the forest. And that also shows how strongly the Swiss feel attached to their forest.
Jetzt den Wald erleben in einem
Now, experiencing the forest in an aesthetic sense, also as a recreational space, is one thing. But understanding how the forest functions, what kind of economic and cultural space it actually represents, is another matter. Do people understand how a forest functions?
Also ich würde die Frage, glaube ich, mit Ja und Nein beantworten. Also grundsätzlich ist ja viel Wissen mittlerweile verfügbar aus der Wissenschaft.
Well, I would answer the question with a yes and a no. Basically, a lot of knowledge is now available through science and research. We know a lot about the forest. And of course, we try to transfer that into practice. The surveys have also shown that people actually know the basics relatively well. But when it comes to details, it becomes a little more difficult. And even science only understands a small part of the whole reality. If you imagine the forest as a spider's web, as an ecosystem interconnected by myriad threads, then we can look at very small sections of the spider's web and observe what happens if you pull one single thread. If you change, let's say, something in the management or intensity of use. But we can never really grasp the complex system in its entirety.
Der Waldraum ist ja auch ein Ort, wo der Mensch immer eingreift.
The forest area is a place where humans constantly intervene. In your perception as a forest manager, is the forest also a design space?
Also das kann ich ganz, ganz klar mit Ja beantworten, wenn man einen Blick auf die Waldgeschichte legt oder wirft.
Absolutely. If you take a look at the history and development of forests, you will see that about 8 to 10,000 years ago, the whole of Switzerland was covered by forest. Wherever you have sites that are unsuitable for forests, like rocks, rocky areas, i.e. places above the timberline, roughly above 2,000 meters, there never was and never will be forest. But where forests can grow, they grew and covered almost the whole of Switzerland. In the course of its history, the forest was used intensively, which meant that by the middle of the 19th century, the forest area in Switzerland had dropped to something between 5 and 10%. Today we have again a forest area of about 30%, and these are the forests we see today. Of course, most of them were created at the time through afforestation and were then cared for and managed accordingly. And that means that a very large part of them was actually shaped by human hands.
And I assume that in this context, every forest has a different history, depending on the region.
Forest images very much reflect their history, yes. In part, you can read a forest like an open book as far as its history is concerned. A very simple example are the afforested areas where you can still see after 80 to 100 or 120 years that they were afforested because the trees are all lined up. This changes over time. But in the beginning, when the forests are young, this alignment is clearly visible. But as the forests grow older and gaps begin to appear, the order becomes blurred. But some traces are still evident.
Das heißt, Marlene Gubsch.
In other words, Marlene Gubsch walks through the forest and reads the forest.
Das ist definitiv häufig der Fall.
That is definitely often so. In my case, because the professional eye is always involved, so you almost can't avoid reading it that way. And that's exciting, because then you can also see regional differences. The Emmental Selective Forest Management, for instance, is a good example. It is a small-scale form of silviculture, where the forest is only exploited tree by tree. As a result, structurally rich forests have grown in the Emmental, with a high ecological value. And of course, it's exciting when you walk through it. And here I come back to the forest atmosphere. It radiates something completely different. It has a different story. It has a different history.
Gibt es denn auch Orte, wo gewissermaßen mit dem Wald experimentiert wurde und
Do we also know places where experiments with the forest have been carried out and continue to be carried out, where zones are used as laboratories to see what happens to the forest? Do forest managers carry out experiments in the forest?
Ja, das ist super, dass Sie das ansprechen. Denn genau vor den Türen von Zürich besteht seit 2019 das Waldlabor in Zürich.
Yes, it's great that you mention that. Because right at the gates of Zurich, a forest laboratory was established on the Höcker Berg in 2019. This is a forest area of about 150 hectares, about the size of 200 football fields, where scientists are trying to establish such a laboratory. Of course it takes time, and that's why the experiment is designed to go on for 100 years. That's the period you need to observe and document the changes taking place. So various research questions deal with forest management, with the intensity of forest management, with different forms of forest management. But, of course, climate change also plays a role. That's why test plantings are carried out with climate-adaptive tree species, and everything is made accessible to the public.
Jetzt, was passiert, was würde passieren, Marlene Gubsch, wenn wir die Wälder einfach so belassen?
What would happen if we just left the forests as they are, or if we didn't manage them at all?
Bei uns im Fachjargon heißt das, wir überlassen den Wäldern ihre natürlichen Entwicklung. Also das heißt, die Waldentwicklung findet statt.
In our jargon, we say that we leave the forest to develop naturally, meaning development takes place without human intervention. That's exciting, but it takes an incredibly long time. Within 5 to 10 years, not much will change. That's why the forests that are left to develop naturally have a secured runtime of at least 50 years, in the hope that after these 50 years, another 50 years can be added.
And that's a long period of time.
The idea behind this is that two very important development phases in forest development can take place in these unmanaged forests. The first one is the climax phase, i.e. the phase when the trees reach their natural age, so to speak. We are talking of a lifespan of 300 to 600, sometimes even 1,000 years. In a managed forest, the average age is between 80 and 120 years. And there we miss out on an important development phase, because as the trees age, their habitat richness also increases naturally. So the trees become thicker and they develop deadwood in their crown. These serve as habitats and niches for very different creatures, animals and plants, which can settle there and, in turn, contribute to species richness. And the second phase, which we also do not find in our commercially exploited forests, or very rarely, is the decay phase. That's when naturally aged trees die and decompose. In natural forest, as we know, there are many different stages of decomposition of this deadwood.
Das heißt, es geht hier darum, eine Art von
In other words, the aim here is to restore biodiversity, a kind of original biodiversity in and through forests.
Genau. Durch die natürliche Entwicklung und durch die Bereitstellung von diesen verschiedenen Alters.
Exactly. We do this through natural development and through the provision of these different aging and decomposition phases. And this is very important for the promotion of biodiversity in Switzerland. It is also a goal laid down in the biodiversity promotion policies set out by the federal government and the cantons. Originally, the target was to have 10% of the forest areas converted into forest reserves. But now only 5% of these original 10 are actually nature forest reserves, i.e., areas that are not exploited in any form.
Weltweit, Malin Gubsch, ist ja der Wald extrem unter Druck, weil eben den Nahrungsmittelkonzernen.
Worldwide, forests are under extreme pressure because they are in the way of the food companies. What needs to change so that forests receive the respectful treatment they deserve again?
Also ich denke, dass die Frage vor allem auf das unser eigenes Konsumverhalten abzielt. Und dort kann man unterscheiden zwischen Holzprodukten und
Well, I think the question primarily concerns our own consumption behavior, and there we can distinguish between wood products and other consumer goods.
Dass wenn wir jetzt zum Beispiel Holzprodukte
When we look at wood products, speaking for Switzerland at least, we all love our wooden table in the living room, or when traveling in the Engadin, we all enjoy stepping into a traditional Alverstübli and catching that typical smell of pine wood. We have a connection to wood, we love wood products, but at the same time, we have to remember where the wood actually comes from. On the one hand, it's important that we try to promote more Swiss wood. On the other, if you look to Africa or South America, we see that there are the tropical forests that have been cleared and are still being cleared to make way for the production of industrial goods such as maize, soya and palm oil. And these substances are all found in our consumer goods. Maize in animal fodder, palm oil especially in cosmetics, as well as in foodstuffs. For instance, in chocolate. And that's where I think it's crucial that we become more aware. What kind of products do we buy? What's in them? And what impact does that have on forest management and use?
You take people to the forest. In a way, you promote communication between people and the forest and try to use the forest as a therapeutic source. How does that work?
Also der Wald stellt an sich einerseits ein ziemlich großes Gesundheitspotenzial da, schon einfach nur durch die spezifische
Well, on the one hand, the forest in itself holds quite large potential for the promotion of health through the special atmosphere it creates, through the high air quality in the forest and through the cooling effect of the shade. But if we don't regard the forest as a mere backdrop, but perceive it with all our senses, then it becomes something else. Because it's through sensory perception that we experience the world, so to speak. And that's the way to better understand it. So, the potential for health-promoting activities in the forest is enormous. In many places, it is used to reduce stress-related illnesses, or because we can really relax through the exercise we do in the forest. We can activate the parasympathetic nervous system and really power down and calm our nervous system in such a way that it has a really positive effect on various bodily functions. And let's not forget that we also have a soul, a psyche, a spirit. All these facets can be addressed at different levels and integrated into the process.
Das wurde ja während vielen Jahren ein Stück weit belächelt.
For many years, this aspect was ridiculed to a certain extent. But nowadays, forest therapy, or forest bathing, has led to the discovery that trees actually release substances that are beneficial to health. What are these substances?
Also das, was Sie ansprechen, sind die Terpene oder die ätherischen Öle, die in der Waldluft...
What you are referring to are the terpenes or essential oils that we find in the forest air. However, I have to say that it is not entirely clear whether it is really the essential oils that do the work. The forest is more than just the terpenes and fragrances it emits. The forest works through the totality of its trees, the different light conditions, its color play, and its different structures, and all of this has an effect on us in different ways and should be used in one way or another. And forest therapy, or forest bathing, also has a lot to do with self-reflection. Where do we actually come from? How strongly are we connected with our surroundings and each other? It's about recognizing that we are a part of the world as a whole. Of course, at present we are in this anthropocentric age in which the whole world is explained from the human perspective. But the goal is that we change this to a biocentric view of the world, a view which allows us to understand and explain human beings as part of the world, as part of nature, and move away from just this purely human-focused worldview.
Im Wald, eine Kulturgeschichte. In dieser Episode waren wir
a cultural history. In this episode, we were on the road with Marlene Gubsch, took a walk through the history of forests in Switzerland and elsewhere, and visited a forest bathing station. With questions from Christoph Keller and the voices of Leslie Löw and Sam Amann. This podcast is available in and beyond the exhibition, on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and wherever good podcasts are obtainable, as well as on the website of the Swiss National Museum. The podcast In the Forest, A Cultural History, is a production of Podcast Lab, www.podcastlab.ch. Thank you.